This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And for the first hour of what's typically Anything Goes Friday, Congressman Ro Khanna is going to be with us taking your calls, or actually is with us. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, represents California. I believe it's the 17th district, right? Yeah, there we go. And his website is Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A dot house.gov. And you can tweet him at Rep. Ro, R-O, Khanna. Congressman, welcome back.
Great to be back on.
And I should add, if it's not self-evident, that you're with us for the hour, taking calls from our listeners on whatever topics are at the top of their minds. Our telephone number, 202-808-9925. Congressman, I'd like to just kind of kick it off with a question. I'll speak specifically of Stacey Abrams in Georgia, because that story is in the news. But you and I both know this is happening in, I believe it's 27 states now, are engaged in massive voter purges and have been since the early 2000s or late 90s. And in fact, the mother of all of these, in terms of in terms of people knowing about it, was Florida in 2000, when the BBC, Greg Palast was working for the BBC, and they did a report that played heavily all across England and Europe, and was literally never played in the United States during that period of time, where the BBC reported that some 90,000 African Americans had been purged from the voting rolls just before the 2000 election. To get by Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris in order to help Jeb Bush's brother, George, win that state. A story that if it happened in Panama or Nicaragua or Honduras, we'd be calling for the overthrow of the illegitimate government. But in any case, if Stacey Abrams loses Georgia by fewer than the 57,000 votes that Brian Kemp is refusing, people who have registered to vote, but he's refusing to put them on the rolls, or, for that matter, if she loses by less than the 570,000 that he's purged from the voting rolls in the last year, or the million that he's purged from the voting rolls in the last couple of years, what should she do? What should candidates, Democratic candidates, start doing if they, quote, lose an election in a state where it's really pretty clear that that election was rigged, and particularly if it was rigged in ways that would have been illegal before the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act?
Well, as we were talking right before the show, Tom, I think the first thing is she should refuse to concede. When Al Gore conceded to George Bush in 2000, that shaped the American public opinion, and it was Fox News, as you pointed out in our earlier conversation, who called that election prematurely for George Bush. So if this is an election that's close, under 50,000 votes, and Brian Kemp continues to refuse to recuse himself as Secretary of State, refusing to certify people who have registered perfectly legally, and that's the difference, then I don't think Stacey should concede. And it's somewhat personal. I knew Stacey back in law school, and she has been someone who has cared about civil rights and cared about economic justice since she was a law student, and she's a fighter, and I hope she won't just concede prematurely.
Yeah, amen. Well, we already have calls from all over the country, so let's just dig right into it. Your calls for Congressman Ro Khanna. Noel in Corpus Christi, Texas. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Dr. Tom. Hi, Congressman. I'm calling because that editorial that Donald Trump put, the opinion, quote-unquote, that was in the USA Today paper, was in our local newspaper. They put some comments in there saying this is only an opinion, yada, yada, yada. I called them, complained about it, because I think any opinion from the office of the president is different than any other opinion. I have not seen a rebuttal. I'm hoping there is one that the Democrats and the progressives are going to put out, and I'd like to get a copy and put it in our local paper at least. Is there any information about that?
Yeah, I'm guessing, by the way, Noelle, your local paper is probably owned by Gannett, the company that owns USA Today. They own smaller papers,
yes,
all over the country.
They are a subsidiary of USA Today, yes.
Yeah, okay. Congressman?
Well, the best response to Donald Trump's op-ed is Donald Trump's own words. I mean, someone should simply print from his book, The America We Deserve, which he published in 2000, his defense of a single-payer system, his admission back then that Canada had a superior health care system, his argument in that book that while he's usually a free market person, he believes that single-payer health care is cheaper and has better benefits. So what USA Today really ought to do, and these papers ought to do, is take that excerpt from his book and print it, and print that side-by-side with the op-ed. Of course, Bernie Sanders has done a full response, but Trump is basically contradicting something he believed 15 years ago.
That's amazing, Congressman. I had no idea he'd written a book that said that.
He did. It's in America We Deserve, and he actually says, I think Canada has a better health care system than we do. I'm usually a free market person, but when it comes to health care, I think a single-payer system is better. And I really think the Democrats need to be pointing this out more, that this was Donald Trump's own view back in 2000.
That is incredible. Joe in Cupertino, California, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
I'm really interested in trying to follow up. I made contact with your office, and I got a really nice letter in regards to your support of what's going on with the Kavanaugh thing. But, you know, yesterday I saw Congressman or Senator Harris interviewing Christopher Wray, and I was dismayed. I think that Merrick Garland accusing himself from hearing this referral, and his admission that the scope and limitation set by the White House over the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings really concerns me. Now, Tom has talked about packing the court with more Supreme Court people, but I don't believe we should concede this nomination to or this appointment to the Supreme Court with what's sitting out in front of us. I believe Dr. Ford. And I'd like to know, as a Yale graduate, what you think about the fact that they were in the same class together, that being Christopher Wray and Kavanaugh, and how he can not recuse himself in the appearance, what appears to be a conflict of interest. And I just wonder what action you can take or who you can persuade to continue to run this to ground, because I think the Supreme Court deserves to be fully staffed with competent people, not just whoever's picked. And I'll wait for your answer. Thank you, sir.
Amen. Congressman, did you graduate from Yale Law School?
Yeah, I try not to mention that.
I'm impressed. That's one of the best schools in the nation, you know. Excuse me.
You know, it's anyone who went to Georgetown Prep or Yale is hiding in the closet.
Right,
of the
hanging their heads right now, right?
But I appreciate the caller's comments. And let me make two concrete points. First, Jerry Nadler, who hopefully will be chairing the Judiciary Committee, has said that we are going to continue to investigate the matter, and the House Judiciary Committee will have tremendous power over this. And Nancy Pelosi has said that the FBI report ought to be declassified and ought to be made public, that we're going to subpoena that. We're going to subpoena the FBI. We're going to try to do our own investigation to get to the bottom of this. The second thing, in terms of the court expansion, I was just talking to Bruce Ackerman the other day, who teaches at Yale, and he pointed out that one of the things we ought to do is modernize the Supreme Court just from a perspective of what we need for the 21st century. The Supreme Court currently is only hearing 80 cases. That's down from 184 cases during the Reagan administration. The reason that they're not able to hear these cases is they have so many cert petitions, and nine justices simply isn't sufficient. The court started with six justices, and Lincoln and Jefferson added justices. So we ought to look at a reform that would be for expanding the court. Maybe you can have a supermajority required for confirmation to modernize the court in the 21st century, and that, I think, will avoid a constitutional crisis. But if we don't modernize the court and you have majoritarian policies struck down by a counter-majoritarian court, that's going to be far worse.
Yeah, and these are things that can be passed through Congress with a simple majority vote.
They are. You know, one other thing that, and this is Bruce Ackerman's idea, but he's spent his whole life studying the Constitution, you could actually term limit justices and then have them serve on a court of appeals, because the Constitution says they need to be in the judiciary for life, not that they need to be on the Supreme Court for life. So you could see a system of 10, 12 years on the Supreme Court, and then you go down to the court of appeals.
Oh, that's interesting, because at the founding of the Republic, they all rode the circuit. In fact, they did that until 1891. That's why they kept expanding, you know, the number of justices, because the number of circuits went all the way up to 10, which is why there were 10 justices during the Lincoln administration. And then, of course, they cut it down to six when Andrew Johnson came in, because the radical Republicans were seriously PO'd that Johnson was a Democrat, et cetera, but all that drama. But, wow, that's a brilliant idea.
It is. It's Bruce's idea. But, you know, his point is that one of the things he said it'll stop people from gaming the system. Right now, they mm-hmm. look for people in their 40s and 50s. You really want someone at the end of their career, and if you have someone say that you can serve 12 years, 15 years, 18 years, you probably have someone be appointed in their 60s, and then they go and serve on the circuit court, and so you get people also who aren't trying to game the system and have someone be there for 40, 50 years.
Yeah, and you do want people who are wise, and wisdom really is, the older I get, the more I realize, a function of experience on top of knowledge. You know, it's not just... anyhow, Paul in Lucerne, California. You're on the air with Congressman Brokana. Oh, hey, Paul. I'm going to hit the break here. I'm sorry. We're just 30 seconds away from the machine forcing a break on me. Let me put you on hold, and we'll pick you up on the other side of this break here. Congressman Brokana is with us, taking your calls for the hour. The telephone number 202-808-9925, and Congressman Khanna's website, khanna.house.gov, K-H-A-N-N-A. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and represents the 17th District of California. You can also tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our very own Yale Law School grad, Congressman Khanna, taking your calls for the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back. And Paul, you're watching us on Free Speech TV, where you're still with us. So what's your question for Ro Khanna, for Congressman Khanna?
Okay. I got two quick points. One, I think we need to pass a law spelling out that all Supreme Court justices should have to follow the same rules and regulations that all federal court judges do.
That's doable.
And the second thing is, I think we should follow the example of Australia. A $200 fine, everybody votes by mail. And then we can get rid of this Greg Paulus problem, but you know, you're kicking people off the voter rolls. If you're a citizen of this country, as soon as you turn 18, we automatically register you to vote. We start sending you ballots.
Congressman?
We know who all the citizens are.
Yeah. Congressman?
Yeah, I agree. We should have a mandatory voting, or at the least have an election day that's off so working families can go to vote. But as we started this show, the Republicans are never going to go for that. I mean, the Republicans don't want people who are trying to register right now to vote. And the reason they're doing that is they know that more voters hurts their electoral prospects, and their best shot at holding power is to have disenfranchisement. So first we need to overcome that to get a progressive majority to be able to pass the type of reforms that you are advocating.
Yeah, in fact, here is Paul Weyrich, the co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, when he was working in 1980 on the Reagan campaign, speaking to a group of Christian Republican activists in a church basement.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And ever since Paul Weyrich laid that out in 1980 for the Republican Party on behalf of the Reagan campaign, that's been what they've been doing.
That's explosive. We need to play that tape. I mean, that's about as candid an admission of what really drives their strategy.
Yeah, you can actually find the video over on YouTube if you plug in Paul Weyrich, I don't want everybody to vote, something like that. The other story that most people don't know, and we just have a minute until we're going to hit the break here. It's not quite enough to bring a caller in. The other story that people don't know is how William Rehnquist got his job as Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He started out in Republican politics in the late 50s and early 60s just outside of Phoenix, Arizona. His gig, the thing that got him into and ultimately got him elected, was he would show up at the polling places in Native American and Hispanic neighborhoods. And he was a big guy. He was like 6'2", with big, broad shoulders. And of course, back then he was in his 30s. He would stand outside those polling places and loud, and he was a lawyer, and he was very, you know, he had a very loud voice. And he would challenge voters. He'd say, you know, are you a citizen? Are you sure you're, and just scare the hell out of people. And they would, you know, and pretty soon the polling places were just emptied.
And I've heard not that specific story, but stories like that. And I think you raise an excellent point, which is the radicalization of the Republican Party of disenfranchisement isn't just Donald Trump. I mean, you had George W. Bush making calls on Kavanaugh's behalf, and you have Rehnquist.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Rokana taking your calls for the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back. It's 21 minutes, 20 seconds past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Congressman Rokana is with us taking your calls for the hour. And Ron in Berrien Springs, Michigan, you're on the air with Congressman Kana.
Hello, Tom and Congressman. Congressman, last election for president, 70 to 80,000 votes were not counted in Detroit and Flint, Michigan, according to Greg Palast. Those are votes that would have went to the Democrats. Because of the domination of the Republican Party, the House, the Senate, and the state and the Supreme Court, they don't have to count votes. They can poison the people of Flint, Michigan, who are predominantly minorities, and get away with it. How do we win the election? Besides going out and voting and hoping, I'm predicting they're going to steal the Democratic senator seat, Peters, by the same count, by not counting the vote if it goes against them, and counting if it does go for them.
Well, in 2016,
they
purged
like running for the Senate.
Yeah, they purged like 200,000 votes, voters, just in the state of Michigan, just before the election in 2016. Anyhow, Ron, thank you. Congressman?
Ron, you're right to raise the concern. I think the real scandal of 2016, even more than Russian interference, was the disenfranchisement of minority communities in battleground states, in Michigan, in North Carolina, in Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton would have won overwhelmingly if those voters had been able to vote. Many were turned away on Election Day or weren't purged from their rolls. Now, how do we deal with that? We, one, shouldn't concede if there are actual questions of votes not being counted. Two, we need to be far more vigilant like we were during the Civil Rights era and recognize that even though John Lewis, my colleague, was beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965 for these rights, that in the year 2018, we still have a lot of work to do, and we can't be naive in thinking that the struggle for voting rights has been won. We really need to be marching, protesting, and vigilant in monitoring these elections going forward.
Elizabeth, in Ashland, Oregon, you're on the air with Congressman Kana.
Hello.
Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm a resident of Oregon for the past 12 years. And we have voting by mail. And the only criticism I've ever heard of voting by mail is that some people are sentimental about going to the polls. But I'm sentimental about staying home with my feet up and studying the book and the issues and who is supporting whom and what, and voting by mail. It's so much simpler. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Congressman?
Well, Elizabeth, I agree with you. In California, we have vote by mail as well, and we have now the California legislature paying for the postage, so people don't have to pay for the postage of their ballots, and you have almost a 3 to 4 week window in which to return your ballots, and that has done a tremendous amount to increase voter participation. So I'm for any type of reform like that that can increase voter participation.
Has California joined Oregon and Washington State in actually closing all the statewide polling places and going exclusively by mail, or is that just an option?
It's just an option. You still can vote on Election Day, but in my district, I would think about 50-60% have voted by mail before Election Day itself.
Wow, that's remarkable. That's great. Pat in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Pat, you're on the air with Congressman Kana.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I just wanted to mention there's a book I read recently by a fellow named David Ferris called It's Time to Fight Dirty, How Democrats Can Build a Lasting Majority in American Politics. Really good book. He's got a lot of great ideas in there. A lot of it is, pretty hopeful stuff. But the first thing we need to do is win in the midterms. But, I just hope that, if and when, I got a lot of anxiety about these midterms, but if and when we do win, that we're ready with some legislation to immediately do some things about voting rights in this country. The Constitution's silent on voting. It's been left to the states, and we've seen what's happened there.
Yep. Pat, we have 30 seconds to the break. Let's get Congressman Connors' response,
We need to be ready to go just with a National Voting Rights Act, making voting day a holiday.
I completely agree with you, and we can't underestimate the midterms. Just yesterday, someone said that they're dropping $4 million, the Koch brothers, in a race in Nevada. The Republicans are not going to give up the control of the House without a fight, and we're going to see a lot of dark money come in a last-minute effort for them to try to save their majority. So it's going to be a fight till the end.
Yeah, they committed $300 million to this race. And then Shelley Adelson, of course, has been pouring money through Paul Ryan's super PAC with just, how do you combat these openly deceptive ads?
It's a huge, huge challenge. I mean, that's why we need to win these things with grassroots, social media, and getting the word out. But we're going to have candidates outspent by millions of dollars in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Rokana, answering your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Program. Our first hour of Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back with more of your calls for Congressman Connor right after the news here at the bottom of the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Congressman Connor's website is Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A dot house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. For the hour, and Susie in El Paso, Texas. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Tom and Congressman. Tom, I want to make this is so important that when you go vote, I want everybody to go and vote, go vote early. And when you go into the polling place and they tell you that your name is not on the list, request, make it known, say, I want to vote on a provisional ballot. Vote on that provisional ballot, seal it in an envelope, then you seal it in another envelope, and on that outside envelope, you put your name and address and all the required information, and your vote has to count because you are a registered voter. You were just taken off the voter list. That gets you re-registered.
No, Susie, it doesn't. That does not get you re-registered. Forgive the interruption, but it does not. If you cast a provision, for example, when John Kerry conceded because of the Ohio vote, he lost by about 120,000 votes. As I recall, there were over 160,000 provisional ballots that had not even been opened. Provisional ballots are only counted if after the election, it varies from state to state, but in most states, you have to go physically to the office of whoever, the county registrar or the secretary of state, depending on the state. You have to go physically to the office with your passport, your birth certificate, all the other stuff that you need to re-register and prove that you are who you say you are. And then sometimes in some states, your vote will be counted. But this will be long after Election Day. So, yes, vote provisional ballots, but it is not what you're describing, Susie.
Well, I worked the elections, Tom.
In what state? In Texas?
In the state of Texas. And they give you provisional ballots and they give curbside ballots because if somebody's in the car and they cannot get out to the polls to vote,
right.
You take Susie, a curbside ballot.
Susie, please check. I mean, it's possible that Texas is the only state in the union that does that. But to the best of my knowledge, there is no state where filling out a provisional ballot is the same thing as registering to vote or making sure that you're registered. And I believe that even in Texas, the provisional ballots are not counted. Susie, if I'm wrong, I will correct myself by the end of the show. But I'm virtually 100% certain that I'm right.
20 years. I've done this for 20 years, Tom. That's why I'm telling people to go vote provisional ballot.
In Texas, okay.
All 50 states,
okay.
They have provisional ballots.
Yeah, and they're placebo ballots. Anyhow, Congressman, your thoughts on this. What do you know about this?
Well, I think Susie's animating principle that everyone needs to vote early is right, but I wouldn't encourage people to be voting provisional. I think they need to be registered and voting because, Tom, you're right, that provisional ballots aren't counted until after the election day. Many times candidates have already conceded or the media has already called the election. I do think we need lawyers and advocacy to try to make sure those provisional ballots are counted. But Tom, my understanding is that it's very hard to get those provisional ballots counted, and often they don't get counted. So that's something that we need to fight for. But Susie's point that we need people going and voting early, and we need people aware that the tactics that folks are going to go to disenfranchise them, I think is the important takeaway.
Yeah. Linda in Deerfield Beach, Florida, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi. Thank you, Congressman and Tom, for taking my call. I wanted to hit you with a real quick fun fact. The federal judge rules against extending voter registration down here in Florida. Judge Robert Hinkle said, nope, you're not going to. It hit where the hurricane hit, the panhandle.
All right.
He said, nope. Wasn't that nice?
Well, Tallahassee is a progressive city, isn't it? We can't let that happen. Yeah. We can't let people vote there.
Well,
forgive the interruption.
Right. College and Gillum happens to be from Tallahassee. So, I mean, these folks know exactly what they're doing and who they're trying to disenfranchise.
Absolutely, the young voters. But my other question was, and I don't know if you know anything about this, because Congressman Pocan said that they're putting a committee together for the Teamsters pension. I'm one of those many 400,000 pensioners. And they're talking about now cutting Medicare. They're now talking about Social Security. I'm almost 60, Congressman. I can't make this money up. I was supposed to get $1,400 a month. And now I'm not even going to get Social Security on top of it. How long do they want me to work? I mean, I'm just asking, have you heard anything on our pension plan, the Teamster pension plan?
I appreciate you raising it. I have. And Mark Pocan and Rich O'Neill, who's going to be hopefully the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, and Tim Ryan, all have been working on this. There's a House bill to protect and shore up pension plans. It's just wrong for people like you to work their whole lives and then see their pension not be there for them. And so this is going to be a priority for House Democrats, and it's a priority, frankly, that progressives and more moderate Democrats share. It's a consensus view. So I'm quite optimistic once we get back to House that we should be able to get something done.
Ted in Gig Harbor, Washington. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, if we knew about voter suppression and purging back in 2000, how come it wasn't emphasized or brought to light prior to the 2016 elections? And what can be done now? And can't we, like, sue the states for these kind of activities?
Well, I think, candidly, one, we were probably overconfident in our ability to win in 2016. I certainly didn't think Donald Trump would win, and I don't think many people in the party thought he would. And so we didn't do enough. And there was probably a complacency about how much people had already been enfranchised and how much we had already won these voting rights battles. And what we saw in 2016 was that's a very naive view. And the voting rights struggle is still very much alive. So I think the experience of 2016 has woken people up and made people far more vigilant.
Leonard in South Pasadena, California. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know that Citizens United, they say money is free speech. If that's true, then we have no free speech. We can't afford it.
Congressman?
You know,
Well, I agree. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges, that the loudest voices are those who have the most funding. Refs Feingold and I have proposed democracy dollars, which would make every voter a donor. And what we've said is the way to beat special interest money is give every voter $50 that they can spend as a credit on a presidential, Senate, or House election. That would dwarf all of the special interest money that is currently in play. But we definitely need some dramatic change in our campaign finance system to give ordinary voters and citizens a voice again in our democracy.
Claire in Fort Worth, Texas. Hey, Claire, you're on the air.
Hi. Oh, wait.
Yep, that's you.
Cut off the speaker.
Thank you.
Cut off the speaker.
That's okay. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Thank you. I wanted to comment on the previous caller from Texas about provisional ballots and registering. You are quite right about registration. Our cutoff was Tuesday. If I don't find someone on the registration book, then I will look them up. And if I can't find them in the county, then in my thing, I will then call elections to see if there's some stray registrations that didn't make it to the book. And they will tell me if that person's not on the ballot, and if they've been purged, they will tell me why and how it happened, at which point I can't offer them a provisional ballot because it's been verified. I do not offer provisional ballots. We hardly have to do them anymore, and mostly because of weird ID situations, because of our different rules. But
provisional ballot or not, it will not put you in the registration.
Right.
That's a separate form which we will hand the voter and say, fix this, you can vote in the next election.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we just can't, we just don't want to do that. Now, about not counting, I will tell you that I don't know about anywhere else, but I can tell you about here. We have an elections review board that is consists of, it's nonpartisan, it has people from every party, plus people that actually work for the elections department, but there are party representatives who are just regular old voters. And they go through every single one of those provisional ballots to determine if something was missed, something had to be done, and some get counted and some do not. But they are not tossed in a drawer. They are done. I have a really good friend who does this, and it takes days. And generally, they don't impact anything. But they still at least get reviewed and counted. That's it. So anybody that didn't postmark their registration by Tuesday is not going to be able to vote in this election. And that poor woman that got put in prison down here, yeah, I would never have given her a provisional ballot if she could not be found by Tarrant County Elections in their books.
Yeah, so apparently a variance from county to county.
That's my opinion.
Thank you, Claire. Congressman?
Well, Tom, you've got the most informed audience of any program in the country, but I appreciate the caller's clarification. I think she's basically right. You've got to register. That's the most important. Vote provisional, but there's no guarantee your provisional ballot is going to count, and it's probably going to be counted or reviewed after the election has been called.
Yeah, and this is, and thus the really push to get people to register. And Tuesday this week, I think, was the registration deadline for like 14 states. It's pretty amazing. Congressman Ro Khanna is with us, taking your calls for the hour. His website is khanna.house.gov, K-H-A-N-N-A. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And you can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Congressman Khanna also represents the 17th District of California. We'll be back with your calls for him right after this. And welcome back. John in San Marcos, Texas. Boy, you got calls from all over Texas this morning. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes, Johnny Rosales in San Marcos, Texas. I just keep hearing people saying, well, we need to take it to court and what have you. Well, remember, people were screaming, I was one of them, during the Bush administration when he was packing the courts. Now we have a president who's put in over 80 life-appointed judges. How are we going to get any real idea that the courts are working for us if they're packed?
Well, the caller raises a great point, and the conservatives have had as a single-minded focus appointing conservative justices and judges, to the point where McConnell hasn't moved some of the undersecretaries and assistant secretaries in these agencies because he has prioritized putting in federal judges and appellate judges. I think we need to learn from the conservatives and have that same kind of strategy and resolve that the Federalist Society has and that the Senate has, and make appointing progressive and liberal judges and justices a priority when we get the next president. And we really should start planning that now and make that one of the highest priorities of trying to get that through the Senate.
Dave in McKinleyville, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Dave, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning. Is this working?
Yeah, actually, Dave, let me put you on hold for a second. It just occurred to me you're listening on a for-profit station, and we're in a nonprofit break, I believe, right now, aren't we, Sean? Yeah, we got a minute 47 seconds in the break. Lincoln in El Cerrito, California, watching us on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna. Lincoln? Lincoln is not listening to his phone. Let's try Chad in Rockford, Illinois. Chad, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Congressman. I'm a new listener, first-time caller. I just wanted to say that if Citizens United thinks that money is free speech, they are ready to give money to the corporations and the Democrats, but they won't raise the minimum wage to allow the working class man to have free speech. And I don't understand when the two two-thirds of the economy is consumer spending, and when Trump's complaining that interest rates are being raised by the Fed, why he wouldn't want everybody to have as much money as possible in their pockets. I'm wondering what the congressman thought of that, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Chad.
Well, I appreciate, Chad, your call. I certainly support a $15 minimum wage, and I do need to bring up Bernie Sanders and I 4 weeks ago did this bill, the Bezos Act, that said that companies that are billion-dollar companies like Amazon and aren't paying their workers $15 should be held responsible for the public benefits that their employees are using. And we were criticized by the entire Beltway, but we called on Bezos to raise the wage to $15. He did for 350,000 employees. Now we're going to try to get Walmart and McDonald's to do that. But in some of these places, we need to use public pressure, have workers tell their stories, and be willing to go for the jugular in saying this is outrageous that you have multi-billion-dollar companies that aren't raising wages.
Yeah, amen. Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. Khanna.house.gov is his website. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. We'll be right back. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and represents the 17th District of California. We'll be right back with your calls for Congressman Khanna right after this. Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. And Dave, listening on KGOE, our affiliate. Whoop, Dave just hung up the phone. Dave, call right back. Sometimes people try to take their phone off speaker and boom, hit the wrong button. Maine in Chicago. Maine, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yeah, I would like to say that, you know, we're having a problem. I see, like, the fourth right coming, but the American capitalist style. And the thing that I think would help stop this if we federally protected the vote. I mean, made it where everybody votes and any restriction on the vote is subject to a prosecution by law. We get rid of the Electoral College so that one man, one woman, one vote counts. So we have a real true democracy here in our country. Right now, we don't have that with the Electoral College. And as much as we talk about voting, until we get rid of that Electoral College, we don't have a true democracy here in America.
Congressman, I would add, if it wasn't for the Electoral College, we would have a 7-2 progressive majority on the court right now, because both Bush and Trump lost in the Electoral College.
Well, I agree with the caller. I agree with you, Tom, that the Electoral College is outdated and anti-democratic. I read somewhere that the Senate majority is now going to be representing about 18% of the population. So we do have these structures that are not reflective of the popular will. The only thing we can do in the onslaught of money in these anti-democratic structures is to mobilize and to get out and vote and to organize in a way that can overcome the concerted power on the other side. It's a fight for the soul of our democracy.
Lincoln in El Cerrito, California. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna. Lincoln?
Oh, hello there.
Hey, you're on the air.
I didn't hear my name. This is Lincoln Payne.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'd like to talk about shifting the burden of taxation from corporate America to the wealthy. Money, income, profits are not actually wealth until they arrive at the individual. I think that the Democrats could steal a serious march on the Republicans by actually calling for a reduction of corporate income tax, not other taxes, but corporate income tax, and beginning a return to the progressive tax structure on the wealthy that we had before Nixon.
Congressman, I would like to add to what Lincoln said, and that is that that sales pitch for no corporate taxes, which has been coming from the Libertarians and the Koch brothers for a long, long time, ignores the fact that corporations use our commons, which is what taxes pay for. Corporations use, you know, they've got an educated workforce by virtue of our public schools. They get to work via public roads. They use the same infrastructure, electricity, telephones, everything, all these rights of way that we collectively own. And that, in fact, you could make the argument, depending on the industry, and that might be a way to adjust taxes, corporate income taxes, or even just taxes in general. They actually probably, in many cases, particularly the polluting industries, have a much greater impact on the commons than individual voters do, and or even individual billionaires do. So I think I can make an argument that we should raise corporate taxes back, like, you know, back to where they were back, you know, during the Eisenhower administration. 1/3 of the total income to the federal government was from corporate taxes. Now it's down to 11%. Your thoughts?
I agree with you, Tom, and that the corporate, there's no argument for the corporate tax cuts that the Republicans passed. They also are, by the way, the top corporations are consuming the most energy, contributing to climate change. Most of these corporations, the effective tax rate is 10%, in some cases 0%, where they're paying no corporate tax because of all of the deductions. And I have traveled around the country to places like Huntington, West Virginia, Paintsville, Kentucky, Jefferson, Iowa, places that voted for Donald Trump. I have never heard a local mayor or local community say to me, you know what, because of these corporate tax cuts, suddenly we're getting jobs in our communities. What they talk about is the need for high-speed internet, community college education, apprenticeship programs. The money would be far better spent on those programs rather than these massive handouts to corporations, which, by the way, aren't even located often in the United States in terms of the employee base. It's really a tax cut that's helping people, many outside the United States.
Alan, in Oakland, California, we got about 2 minutes to the end of the hour here, Alan. You're on with Congressman Khanna. Please make it
Thank
quick.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. Sure. Our media constantly parrots the myth that our elections are free and fair. Most Americans are not well enough informed to realize the falsehood of that mantra. The Republicans only win by massive disenfranchisement, gerrymandering, but most pernicious of all, changing the vote counts electronically through totally unverifiable electronics in our voting systems with secret tabulation software. I suggest that every Democratic office holder immediately challenge the fact that we now have fake elections every time they take the floor in Congress or at any press interview or town hall. The demand must be for hand-counted paper ballots with full transparency now, with everyone being allowed to vote. The American people need to be educated that we have election theater, not elections, and the Democrats have been silent on this for the last 18 years since the theft of Florida.
Well, I agree with the caller that we need paper ballots or paper verification. I also think we need ballots to be posted on a website publicly so that you can trace to make sure that your ballot was actually received and counted, and there's a public accounting of that. This was necessary to make sure that people believe in our process and so that there's no tampering in any election. And the tampering is often most possible in local elections. I mean, obviously, it would take a huge conspiracy, given the localized nature of our elections, to rig voting machines in every county and every jurisdiction. That's not the case when you're talking about local elections where fraud and hacking is even easier.
Yeah. Congressman, a little less than a minute here, about a half a minute. Thoughts on the next week, the upcoming week?
Well, we're in recess, so most of the focus has been, of course, on the elections and making sure that we are mobilizing our base and giving it everything we have to win back the House. I did have an Internet Bill of Rights that I put forward. I mean, after the news about the Facebook scandal and Equifax and now Google's breaches, we need some legislation that's going to inform Americans when their data has been compromised, that's going to require consent before your data is taken up. And I'm hopeful to push that when we get back in the lame duck session.
Mm, that's great. Congressman Khanna, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thank you. It was great being on.
It is always a pleasure having you. Congressman Ro Khanna, his website, khanna.house.gov, K-H-A-N-N-A. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. And he is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and represents the 17th District of California. We'll be back with Anything Goes Friday right after the news here at the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.